Once again, I ask for y'all's prayers that the Lord would bless me to get the thought out. My thought this evening is one, it's a fairly simple thought, and it has to do with the world we live in today. And it's inspired by the verse in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 20. It says, O Timothy, keep that which is committed to thy trust. Avoid profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science, falsely so called. And it was that oppositions of science that kind of stuck out at me. And I've got to thinking about that. So here in this verse, it's basically the avoid profane and vain babblings is basically saying we should avoid topics not suited to Christianity. The profane there means something that would not be worthy to cross the threshold of the tabernacle is where that word comes from. And then oppositions of science is opposition, and the word that they use for science is gnosis, which means present and fragmentary knowledge. And I thought about that. That defines science in our day. Anybody that's taken a science class knows that science claims to be based only on data. It's what you can see, what you can measure, what you can observe. And from that, they think up theories. These theories are to explain what we see, what the data is, why it works that way. And of course, as they come up with the theories, they start testing this as well. If what I observe and what I theorize is causing that, I should be able to do an experiment and see maybe something else over here. And they'll run experiments to see if they get that data. And if they do, they say, yes, that works. That theory is correct. But if it doesn't, then scientists either say, okay, that theory's wrong, and they throw it out completely, because, of course, the data is what everything's based on, or they will say, well, maybe I just need to adjust that theory. Maybe I didn't quite think through what the data was telling me. What would you do if I told you that basically scientists believe that you just keep changing what you believe in until it fits what you see? Because that is science at its core. What you see is empirical evidence, and even if you can't explain it, you keep coming up with theories and testing them until you can explain it, and when everything matches, you're good. And when something comes along and changes, change what you believe in. I was reading an article the other day, and scientists are starting to propose that instead of physics as we know it today being the underlying foundation for everything, consciousness is actually what everything is made of. Now, how does that set with what you know today? That everything is made up of consciousness first before it exists. And then once it exists, then you can start describing the physics of it. Because physics, if you think about the very nature, describes relationships between two entities, between two items. If I asked you what an electron was, a lot of you would say, well, it's a negatively charged particle. That would be a correct statement. However, so is an ion. That's also a negatively charged particle. So what's the difference between an ion and an electron? An electron is a little particle that makes up part of an atom. An ion generally is a molecule or something with a negative charge. Physics describes those differences based on the relationship of the particles together. Everything that we have in physics is based on a relationship to something else. And what scientists are starting to realize is they can't really describe to you exactly what an electron is. They can describe its property in relation to everything else, but not what it is. What makes it, it? And the reason why I mention that is it goes back to a very old philosophy called panpsychism, which is actually this, that belief, that philosophy dates all the way back to Socrates' time, sometimes even earlier, that underlying everything is a conscious. Maybe not the same thing as what we have, but something that tells it what it is. So when you think about conscious, what is consciousness? What makes you aware that you're conscious? Scientists are struggling to explain that. We can develop artificial intelligence. We've got examples of things they pull together. But how would they know if that artificial intelligence becomes conscious? What would suddenly make it conscious? They can't explain that. It's a gap in the data they observe and the theories they pull together. And so now they're starting to look at, well, maybe underlying everything is this need for consciousness. So the scientists define consciousness as the ability to record and recall information as one of the properties. But also that information must become part of a singular whole. It can't be divisible from it. And the reason why they define consciousness like that is for you to be conscious of who you are, you take information in, you record memories, you recall memories. Those memories describe your experiences unique to you as an individual. And it is that grouping of experiences that gives you your consciousness. But so far in scientists, they've noticed that in the physical world, they don't see that unity of experience. If they see a glass with water and ice in it, that's exactly how they describe it, a glass with water and ice. Different things combined, it's a whole, but I could separate these out. Whereas consciousness is defined as something that can't be separated out. Once that information goes into us, if you think about the way you work, it is part of you. Once you've learned something, generally, it sticks around. Now, I realize that age and things that do impact our abilities, but if you think about stuff you've learned, tying your shoes, your name. I mean, if you really start thinking through things like that, how much you've learned, how much you retain, and it's just part of you. I remember trying to learn to tie shoes. I'm left-handed. In a family full of right-handed people, trying to learn to tie shoes when everybody showed you backwards, it didn't go so well. I struggled with that. So I remember the struggle of tying shoes. My Aunt Mildred was left-handed. She came over one day and asked Mom, well, can I show him? And I picked it up like that. And you know, today, if I go to tie shoes, I don't even think about it. It's part of that knowledge. It's just part of me. I can tie shoes. Some of the other things I want us to think about when it comes to science. How many of y'all have heard of the Big Bang Theory? It's a theory out there that everything we see in the entire universe was at one point in time smushed down into a single point. And at some point in time, for some reason, it exploded. And it expanded out rapidly. Just massive acceleration. And at some point, it sort of stabilized. And since then, it's been expanding at a constant rate. The reason why I mention that is that constant rate is referred to as Hubble's constant. And it's one of the things that scientists use to try to base how accurate our understanding of modern physics is. And unless y'all read scientific journals, I do, I like science, so I do read stuff like that. Do you know there's a question come up on if this Hubble constant is actually constant? That two different sets of scientists are saying, wait a minute, we're measuring two different things, two different speeds. And if it's true what the scientists are measuring, then physics as it's been taught in our universities may need a rewrite. Because it means a lot of what the Hubble constant confirmed is suddenly no longer true. And the reason why I bring this one up is in the article, it was an interesting statement made by one of the scientists. She was the one that had discovered that it looks like that the universe is actually expanding faster than it's supposed to, faster than can be explained by our current laws of physics. And so she carefully did her research. She had her research peer-reviewed, and she published it in a scientific journal. And when that journal was read by one of her colleagues that worked in the same building, he apparently read it late one night. She was still in her office. And she looked up, and this gentleman was standing in her office. And he was upset. He was so angry, she said, that it was the first time she started realizing she was with him in a building at night by herself. She was starting to fear for her safety. He was that emotional about the fact that she would dare publish something that contradicted his work. I mention that because sometimes when you're dealing with people and science, they don't like it if you tell them that it's their religion. They push back on that. Oh no, I just believe in the facts. But oftentimes when scientists get together between themselves and suddenly facts are pointing in two different directions, the history books are full of examples of scientists that get very angry with each other, threaten each other, do things that are just absurd. AC versus DC electricity, which one is best for use in powering homes? Do you know at one time that was a topic throughout the United States? And do you know what one of the scientists did to help prove his point of how dangerous the other type of electricity was? He staged basically carnival shows where he would go around and he would hook up elephants to electricity and kill them, just to prove how dangerous the other guy's version of electricity was. It had an effect, and because of that, we run AC electricity instead of DC, because it was perceived as being more dangerous. Today, we know that AC or DC electricity both is dangerous. If you get hit with the right voltages and the right current, regardless of which brand it is, it can and will kill you. But when scientists get their emotions flared into this, and they're operating off of what they see, they will try to keep and protect their beliefs. There's another thing about scientists that I find interesting. So when you've got a theory and it looks really good, but it's just not quite lining up, there is an acceptable method of fixing that. It's called fine-tuning. Your theory's not wrong, you just have to fine-tune it. Now, how do you fine-tune a theory? So back to this Big Bang. Based on what scientists have been able to calculate, there should be so much matter in the universe and so much energy, and if it exploded right, we should have this amount of matter and this amount of energy left, and especially for it to be in a state of equilibrium. Because if we don't have that, then the universe as we know it shouldn't exist. Well, guess what they found? We don't have that. We don't have enough matter to fit their theory. We're lacking matter. So what do scientists say must be out there? Have y'all ever heard of anything in the news or a scientific article talking about dark matter? So they came up with this theory that there's this thing called dark matter. We can't see it. The only way we can detect it is it's really heavy. So if we're looking way out in space and we see gravity way out in space and we really can't seem to see anything else out there, it must be dark matter. But do you know we still haven't done anything to prove dark matter exists? There is no empirical data that scientists hold to so tightly that shows it exists. And if you take that away, their theories about how the universe formed and why it's stable don't fit. What was it the word back up there, an opposition of gnosis, present and fragmentary knowledge? How many times have you been ridiculed by somebody because you dared say, yeah, I believe the Lord spoke the world into existence, and I think he did it in 7 days? I have friends who are physicists. I can tell you they will ridicule me like that every time I bring it up. It goes against everything they believe. So they fine-tune what they see, or their theories to what they see, to explain it, to make it fit, because that way they don't have to say, I'm wrong. I want us to turn to 2 Peter chapter 3. And starting in verse 1, this second epistle, beloved, I now write unto you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance, that ye may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets, and of the commandment of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lust, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. But the heavens and the earth, which are now, by the same word, are kept in store, reserved under the fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Does that sound like our world today? People that are willingly ignorant, willingly saying that creation didn't happen the way that it happened? You know, our world today is fulfillment of what this prophecy basically says. We're living in those times where men are saying it's not real. And so I'm going to go back to whether consciousness is the basis of everything. If there had to be consciousness for any matter to exist, for anything to exist, first, what do you think that consciousness is? Think it's that intelligent being that nobody wants to recognize? And if all matter has a conscious part built into it, wouldn't it be possible then for God to speak to it and it obey his command? Now, scientists had to change their theories around to fit what they were seeing. I haven't had to change my belief at all. What they're now starting to say, I look at it and say, yeah, that sort of fits with what God said, although I don't believe it's 100% true. I think of the verse that talks about God sets one thing up against another so man can't find him out. In quantum mechanics and quantum physics, it's the study of really weird stuff in the universe is the best way to describe it without going into detail. But in that, as the scientists study that, that's where they're really getting into the finer inner workings of the very smallest particles that make up everything we see. But there's an interesting phenomenon with that. Did you know a lot of times once you observe those particles, the very observing of those particles changes them? That if you want to see whether this particle is spinning a certain way or not, you have to understand as soon as you observe it to confirm which direction it's spinning, it's no longer spinning that direction. Think God sets one thing up against another so man can't find him out? Because now man is trying to figure out, okay, so if I observe it, it changes, but then if I want to check to see where it changed, it's going to change again. And they're working their way through it. Man is very stubborn at trying to figure things out. Instead of just saying, Lord, What do you think is important for me to know? What is the real truth about what is important to know in this universe? Why are we here? I find it interesting that even in the Big Bang, they don't know why it exploded. The whole why question, why do we exist, regardless of how it goes about, if you take God out of it, they still can't explain why would that little dot explode? Why would it form millions of stars and galaxies? We don't have an explanation. We do have the Word of God that says why. He had a plan. He wanted to bring it about. And He put it into action. And we also know, as was said here, there's an end to this plan. But the heavens and the earth, which are now, by the same word, are kept in store, reserved under fire against the day of judgment and the perdition of ungodly men. I encourage all of you all, as you go through the world and face oppositions of science, remember what science is. It's an incomplete knowledge. It is firmly held to and believed by some men with the fervency that we hold our beliefs. But it doesn't make it right. Y'all pray for me.